Hi, guys, and welcome to day three of our E3 coverage. This is the last day. All the smoke is settled. E3 is over. And we are gathered here to talk about everything we have seen and done and who we've seen and done it to. I'm Cap.
I'm Colin.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Matt.
I'm also Matt.
And I'm Kilplex.
Yeah, the last Matt is Matt Rex, and he's been with us for all of our E3 coverage since last year. And Kilplex, well, Kilplex is the man behind the streaming videos that you may know and love, and if not, you should definitely check him out. And he does our Nerdy Showcase feature, Kilplex's Flash Game Reviews on Nerdy Show. So
and AKA Austin, just in case.
Yeah, because we will inevitably just end up calling you Austin. So. we did the day one video, and it was all of us here, minus Brandon, and then we did the day two video, and...
Podcast.
Podcast, right. We've been doing videos.
It's been a long three days,
It has
guys.
Been a long 3 days. We've been doing...
Cap just thought they were videos, but they weren't.
They had moving pictures in them. So we have been doing E3 videos this whole time. They're being published, and they will be continue to be published until we get them all out. We've got a great selection of developer interviews and lots of demos and so on and so forth. But here we've got in the second day we had just myself, Colin, and Matt. So we've got a lot of ground to cover. But Matt Spill, our pop culture and Star Wars correspondent. Speaking of Star Wars, let's discuss the elephant in the room. We spoke about it a little bit yesterday, and we're gonna get into it today because we saw it in action. Star Wars 1313.
Holy fuck!
Nice.
It was insane. Let's just talk about what happens when we got to the. We got to the quote-unquote booth.
Which is just as important. I mean...
It is.
Like, congratulations to LucasArts on presentation. Because it's not just a demo room. It's an entire, like, Star Wars-themed, like, bunker elevator with, you know, like, carefully crafted propery on the outside to, you know, illustrate a sort of a Coruscant-looking storage elevator. And outside these small... windows were plasma screens pushed up against the, you know, so-called elevator in order to show scenes of going down a large shaft in Coruscant. So it looked like you were like entering Sector 1313.
Yeah, it was like you were descending into. It was descending down into the depths. Yeah,
they didn't start the presentation until we actually reached the bottom level. Which
was great. Keep in mind there was actually TVs on the roof as well.
Yeah, the sides, the front, the roof.
That closed up. Like blast shields once we reach the bottom.
Yeah, it was insane.
We have in all the various E3 meetings and all the various levels of secrecy and everything that we've been to ever in any of these years, we have never seen anything as ridiculous as this. It was completely insane.
Yeah, it was like you were stepping onto a ride at Disney World. Truly, it felt like they were going to hand out the 3D glasses, and you know, I was actually disappointed when the girl who closed the door didn't say "May the Force be with you" as the door closed.
Yeah, it felt like Star Tours.
It did. It felt like Star Tours. You know, where's Rex? That's what I want to know.
I have a question. How long was the line to get into that?
This was by appointment only.
We actually didn't wait in that many lines, Brendan.
Okay, fuck you, because last year we had to wait like six hours, which was an entire day just to see one thing. You're saying that didn't happen this time.
No, there really wasn't much line riding to really be done this year. It was just...
Oh, Jesus.
So many, there were so many things that weren't necessary. Like, it was so hard to say what the attractions really were that no one really rushed to any particular one area.
I mean, we were the attraction.
It's true.
Everyone was lining up to meet us.
I expected that. That was awesome.
So anyway,
hey, so yeah. Explain to me what Star Wars 1313 is before we talk about anything.
Okay,
else.
Okay, let me gauge this a little bit. Brandon, have you seen anything about this game?
No, I've been doing nothing but working and then playing Diablo 3, and the hell with anything else.
All right. Well, what you missed while you were in Diablo 3 and Whole Foods is Star Wars 1313 is, it's not officially rated yet, but it is most likely going to be the first mature rated Star Wars game ever. You play as a bounty hunter in the deepest sector of Coruscant beneath the Earth, basically, that not there's any Earth left in that place. And you are basically playing in the bowels of society with where evil people do evil things.
Yeah, it's. I mean,
wow.
Spill, correct me if I'm wrong. This is could potentially be and probably will be the first mature rated Star Wars media property.
So there's no whiny protagonist?
No.
Because all the movies are, you know, PG-13 okay, awesome. Or less.
I mean, I guess of recent, they've done two horror, like adult horror novels. They've done some, you know, youth
horror
books
before. Books aside, I'm talking like media in terms of visual media.
Occasionally.
That Star Wars porn.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't think that recent parody was officially licensed, but.
Do we know what genre this game is? Like the gameplay?
It's Uncharted on bath salts.
What? Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, it's Uncharted, third-person action adventure shooter with film noir elements.
Yeah, cover system, God. The laser. In the demo that they showed, they played through the first level. Well, 10 minutes of the first level.
They played through a theoretical version of the introductory sequence to the game.
Okay.
And they made it very clear that even though they showed some mocap information of these characters, that these aren't necessarily the final characters. Because they even made a line like, these are the characters that we've, you know, created to show you today.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They were very, very tight-lipped about pretty much everything about it.
The mocap, I mean, that you mentioned that was super impressive. They've definitely come up, you know, talking to ILM, and I imagine probably, you know, even incorporating some elements of Lucasfilm animation have really come up with some really neat ways to mocap. I mean, every single part of the facial expression of these actors.
Was it kind of like L.A. Noir?
Yeah.
No, because with L.A. Noir, it was always... What's good about L.A. Noir is like that was always just a video kind of projected on a model, whereas this was true, like a true dynamic model. Like the L.A. Noir tech looks incredible, but it's a weird thing. Like they kind of map video onto a face. It's like face mapping. But with this, it was like a dynamic model. There's like no trickery going on. Like our models are this high fidelity and the mocap is this high fidelity that we don't need to do any tricks. Like this is it.
They actually got into, because they wanted to showcase their technology, they actually got into how they're developing this. And this is actually not just LucasArts. This is LucasArts in conjunction with every other branch underneath the Lucas umbrella, including Industrial Light and Magic. So they showed us how they did the motion capture for these characters, and they actually were wearing helmets with two cameras pointed at their faces, capturing live audio as they acted, and they had mocap dots painted all over their faces.
What?
Yes.
That's awesome.
And, yeah.
And here's the thing. This game looks so crazy good. It was running on a PC, but there is no conceivable way that it will be playable on modern day systems. Therefore, it must be being designed for next gen systems.
I mean, they obviously didn't say anything.
I've heard quite a few things like that.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is the only other game I heard something about that with was Watch Dogs from Ubisoft, but they actually came out and said, "No, this will be on 360 and PS3."
Oh, wow,
but,
really?
Like, yeah, but, I mean, the LucasArts guys were just kind of like, we're not talking about it, but it's, you know, having watched the trailer, unless they brought down the quality a lot, there's no way what they showed us could run on a 360. It's just not possible.
Yeah.
Mm. There were a few other games there that were like that, too, that I heard of, and I actually watched a tech demo for the Square Enix, apparently. Made a tech demo. I don't know if any of you saw it there.
No.
It is amazing. It is supposedly the future of the Final Fantasy games, which I'm like, I don't give a shit at this point, but I watched it and it's so fucking impressive that it looks like a movie. It's like, it looks like they're just making a video and that there's no way this will ever be a game unless it's on a next gen system years from now. I mean, it's that good, but it's not possible. So, but that it was really impressive. You guys should check that out at some point. So,
do you know if that's online at all?
Yeah, it is.
Oh,
it's
cool.
Just look for Square Enix tech demo. I think it's called like the Agni or something. AGNI. Oh. I don't know what that means, but yeah.
So yeah, Star Wars 1313 was absolutely phenomenal. Everything we saw absolutely blew us away, and we've got a top five best of E3 list we recorded, and that is the number one thing as our consensus between. Matt Spill, myself, and Colin, that was the number one holy shit of the things that we saw.
Yeah, exactly. So what was some of the other stuff that we saw today? What did we start with? We started with Yeah, didn't we start with Young Justice?
We did start with Young Justice.
Wait, explain.
Yeah, yeah. There's a studio that called Little Orbit that is actually working on a Young Justice game, and this is super fucking exciting. It's called Young Justice Legacy. It is actually in between the seasons one and two of Young Justice. There's a 5-year gap, and season two is 5 years after the first season. This takes place in the fourth year. And it's actually written with Greg Weissman and the rest of the team behind Young Justice. And this is basically filling in the story of what happened, like, with Aqualad. And they've got some slogan. I can't remember. It's like one will fall, one will die.
One will rise, one will fall, and one will die.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you know which ones if you... and watching the show.
Yeah. And I guess this time we're going to actually get to see how that happens. And you can play with the... It's a team-based game. Each mission involves three characters that you can swap between. It's got a huge roster of characters from both the first season and then characters we met in season two. So that it's very...
See, this is interesting. Sorry, because it makes me feel like they didn't tell us what happened between those years they skipped just so they could make the game. Do you think that's what they did?
No, I think it was a very much after the thought. The game it's very, very, very early in development. So I want to preface that it comes out early next year. So this was not a timely release or anything. Like, this is actually going to be kind of like auxiliary information. Like, if you think we know everything about season two already, we're really going to know everything by the time this comes out. And I don't know that it's going to be that brilliant a game. It seems like it could be fun, but unless it like improves greatly, I would mostly be working through the game simply to get to the story that I want.
Yeah.
It's very much what you'd expect from a superhero battle system kind of game. But like I said, it's super early. There could be a lot of just like really fun elements of it that simply don't exist yet. Cause what we played was very raw, playable, but raw.
And then we moved on from Young Justice to Hell Yeah.
Hell Yeah, we did.
Hell Yeah.
That game's awesome.
Hell Yeah. Yeah, Matt Downham, you played a lot. You played that game, as did Cap. Do you guys want to talk about Hell Yeah?
Sure do.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, do the honors, though.
Oh, well, first, you know, I guess to preface things off, it's made by what seems to be a bunch of mad Frenchmen.
Yeah.
So
crazy, beautiful Frenchmen.
So if that's not already, you know, got you interested, it was very funny listening to them, because they were sitting over my shoulder, standing over my shoulder while I was playing and just spouting off all sorts of nonsense, which made I kind of wish I could buy like a copy of those guys with the game.
Yeah, my favorite moment was I didn't get a chance to play it, but when he jumped out of the booth and goes, "Does anybody want to see how we kill a panda?"
What the fuck is this? That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the game starts with explaining how there is a king of hell.
A prince.
And also a prince of hell. Well, there was a king, but then the prince takes his place.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
And it's a prince rabbit. It's a rabbit.
He's a skeleton.
The rabbit finds out that the paparazzi took naked photos of him having sex with a rubber ducky.
Basically.
And he has to go through hell and kill all 100 monsters to reclaim the paparazzi nudes of him.
Or more specifically...
Okay, I have to stop you right there. Because what company made this? Because this sounds a lot like the humor of the Disgaea games. So I'm kind of wondering which company made this.
They have not published anything this mainstream before, and it's being distributed by Sega.
It's an XBLA.
Wait, they're still alive?
As well. Hey, as far as Sega's presence here at E3,
we spent a lot of time.
Sega as a publisher is alive and well. Now they make some stupid Sonic the Hedgehog racing games, but meanwhile they have Aliens, Colonial Marines, and Hell Yeah, and we spent a ton of time there.
Nice.
Yeah. Alongside that crazy story, it's basically kind of like a Metroidvania 2D platformer, where you're killing tons of things, upgrading your character, and there's just tons of comedy involved and a lot of just ridiculous over-the-top stuff. And it's also like a visually gorgeous game. Like, the artwork is amazing.
If you want to combine pre-existing games to try to get an idea of what this game looks like, think about the animation and humor of Earthworm Jim, plus, as Matt said, the sort of Metroidvania, like, traversing and upgrading sort of idea. And then also throw in one of the greatest and most overlooked Nintendo titles of all time, Drill Dozer for the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah.
And a little bit of Sonic the Hedgehog. And you have Hell Yeah.
Man.
And also a really, really twisted sense of humor.
Yeah.
Really twisted
like,
sense of humor.
Well, X-rated. Like, I'm surprised they can get away with some of that stuff.
They told us that in one level you fight a giant green dick in space.
And the only way to defeat it is because the only way to defeat it is one of your powers or one of your abilities is that you can zoom out on the map and to see, you know, more of the level. But the only way to defeat the giant green dick in space who wants to fuck his girlfriend, you zoom out to show the dick that it is in fact alone. And so it explodes.
What?
Yeah. Spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers.
What in the crap?
Yeah, and so that's actually how you beat the giant green dick in space, which they wanted to call, I think, Your Majesty, but they ended up calling it like something regards to Irish.
Your Irish Majesty.
Yeah, your Irish. Yeah.
Hey, I was going to say going into this, I had no idea if anything was going to hold my interest as much as Diablo 3 does. I was pretty much going to say, was there anything at E3 that I would like more than Diablo 3? And you just described something that I can't wait to play. And all I've heard is a brief description of it, and I want nothing more than to have that game right now.
Yeah, it's going to be it's not going to be. It is really, really fun. And the guys who created it, the reasons why they actually created Hell Yeah was apparently previously they made a family game that they wanted to put some humor into.
Or a couple of them.
Yeah, or a couple of family games that they wanted to put some humor into or some things into it, but they couldn't because it was a family game. So they're getting progressively and progressively French and progressively pissed off. So
by French, did you mean frustrated?
No, French. and so they have all this angst, and so they basically turned that into Hell Yeah. So it's basically this art angst game where they put all of the things that they wanted to into this family game, into this really not family game.
And there's actually an awful lot more we can say about this game. We do have a video that we're going to put out, so that'll be out shortly, where you can check out these amazing, crazy Frenchmen and their beautiful, beautiful game.
I basically just want to champion this game for them because I don't think anyone's going to hear about it.
Yeah.
So I just kind of want to tell everybody that I know, like, you should check this out because it's so ridiculous you should see it.
Yeah, this was originally actually suggested to us by one of the producers at Aliens Colonial Marines. They suggested that we come check it out because they also wanted it kind of championed a little bit more.
Yep.
Yeah, Destructoid gave it some nominations, but otherwise I didn't see that anybody else had given it the big up that it deserves.
Yeah, but even then, Destructoid, it was just a nomination and it was like kind of like a little bit of a throwaway.
But
yeah.
OMG, hell yeah. Like, yeah. It is so good. Lots of internet jokes too. Let's see.
Ni
No Kuni, The Wrath of the White Witch. Now, Brandon, you might not recognize that title, but you do know this game, and you probably do too, Austin. This is the Studio Ghibli game.
Oh right, that looked amazing.
Yes.
That was going to be one of my questions. Yeah.
Yes. 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 Okay. So, as you may know, there was one made for Xbox and PlayStation, and one made for the DS. Now, the DS one, we've been told by Namco Bandai, who's putting this game out, was not picked up for distribution here. They don't have anything to do with it, and they're just putting out the one game. Regardless of that, this one title, it looks incredible. It's got a lot of the things you'd expect from a JRPG, but with a lot of characterization that's probably much better than the average JRPG, and a battle system that's a lot of fun. In fact, it's kind of like Pokemon, but what if Pokemon was not turn-based?
What? That's what I've always wanted from a fucking Pokemon game.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's got your JRPG sensibility, yeah. Brandon.
They designed 100 familiars is what they're calling the creatures. And these familiars you can use to fight your battles for you. But both the player or I hesitate to call them trainer because I don't know what really they operate in a trainer, Pokemon trainer capacity. But say the kids who are throwing out these monsters and everything, they've got two monsters with them at all times. They can swap between them. You actually play as all these characters at the same time and swapping through them in the battle, and these are live action battles. Like, you move around the screen and choose, and each action's, whether it's attack or a certain magical ability, has its own, like, you can attack, and the attack has a good timing recovery, but magical take longer to recover from before you can deploy it again. That's kind of how it works. And there's also an MP meter, and it's a bit, I went into it blind, and it's a bit complicated to go into blind, but man, I could see how once you figure it out, it's be a hell of a lot of fun.
The art's incredible. It looks beautiful.
Yeah, and there's
it looked really amazing.
Fully animated cutscenes, gorgeous cell shading. This game, there's not too much we can say about it because there we have a video, and it's good, and you'll be able to see some of the games and hear some of my questions about it. But Japanese developed, there really wasn't anybody on hand who could give us the insight that we were looking for exactly. Suffice it to say, it's definitely a game to watch out for. And if you have ever loved JRPGs, this is probably a refreshing change of pace for something a bit better than all the anime schlock we've become used to.
Is there any sort of release date?
Yes, there is. I can't remember what it is though. It's either fall or spring, right?
Yeah, it's going to be in the fall.
Yeah.
Because I just know November.
It's been in development for several years, so I've been waiting for it. And I just kind of forgot about it while waiting for it. So.
I'm pretty positive it's going to be in November.
I think it's November too, because they gave us a really open-ended playthrough. Like, they're like, here you are. You're on top of a hill. You could go to this town, or you could go around this boat and go out to sea. And I'm like, all right. Well, the town sounds pretty interesting, but I bet not as many people go on the boat. So I quest across some hills, and I go on the boat. And I fight a bunch of monsters, and then I finally find a place to like set the boat down, and it's overrun with like robots and new monsters, and they really killed me bad.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I actually went into the forest.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was like this glen. There was this forest glen that I went into, and it was cool. Yeah, it was beautiful. It's a beautiful game.
I know that it's really loud there, but were you able to hear the music at all?
A bit.
We had headphones on.
Soundtrack headphones. For
yep.
It,
the... yep. It sounded like a Studio Ghibli film. Yeah. It sounded like it, because I think that's one of the reasons why they brought out the headphones, so that you could hear the beautiful score. Yeah. It was incredible. I use that word a lot, but I'm sorry. But it's like incredible. It's like hex and phenomenal.
We saw a lot of incredible things.
We did.
Incredible.
Unbelievable.
You guys had some additional Nintendo Wii U experiences today. Why don't you fill us in on those? Because there was probably the best piece of swag at E3 this year of stuff we said. Well, actually, okay, there's a couple runners up. Matt, for example, you checked out a Assassin's Creed 3 demo, and you got something really amazing.
Yeah, I don't know if they gave them to everybody. I certainly didn't see a lot of people walking around with the bag. But I was one of the first people to check out Assassin's Creed on day two yesterday, and they gave everybody in the room a hardcover art encyclopedia of Assassin's Creed. And they sell
the best shit ever.
Yeah,
it's really nice. They sell the Assassin's Creed encyclopedia on their store, and it's like $50 or $60.
Jeez.
But this version was embossed with E3 Collector's Edition 2000. It says June 2012 E3 version, and it has all of the Assassin's Creed 3 art. And I don't think they've released the updated version of the book yet for sale that includes the new game's art. So it was definitely one of the nicest pieces of swag that I saw there. And I'm assuming, Cap, the runner-up was going to be the Nintendo stuff.
Yeah, Nintendo, in promotion of Nintendo Land, had these different booth girls would give out these, I don't know, pieces of this thing where you could stick all these different pins into, and there were five different pins for the five different games you could play, and you could only get the pins if you played the game. So you had to collect all the pins because they really wanted people to get hands-on with Nintendo Land, for better or for worse.
Well, I think for better, honestly, at least for me.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, it was funny because at the end of the day, there was like an hour left, and Cap went to go do something that we'll talk about later. But at the end of the day, I was kind of on my own, and I went to the Nintendo area to grind pins. And they were out of a lot of them, so I didn't score criticals on all of the pins. But the pins I was able to score, I got like five different. How many pins were there? I think there were five.
There were five.
Yeah, five pins. But I was able to play the Ninja Star game that was, what was it called?
Takemura's
something Japanese ninja ship.
Yeah, Takemura's ninja. Something.
Which franchise is that from?
It's from Takemura something something. It's what's neat about this is it's actually one of the handful of Nintendo properties that have never made it over to the United States, and it's a ninja game where you play with an art style based on origami. So you play an origami ninja, and this is actually coming to the United States for the first time in Nintendo Land. And there's a lot of really cool eclectic Nintendo properties that just haven't made it over here yet, and I'm always excited to see a new one pop up.
Yeah, it's called Takemura's Ninja Castle, and so it's basically that samurai.
It's the Shuriken
star,
game.
Yeah, the Shuriken thing
that they demoed last year, but really amazing art.
Yeah, so that was that. And then I also played the Donkey Kong's Crash Course, which we talked about earlier, which was that sliding around. Game, but the thing that I found interesting was I played it, since I was grinding pins, I played it twice, and the first time I played it, I just watched the big screen. I didn't watch on the gamepad.
The way the game works is there's a very large maze you have to navigate as you're this little rolling thing, and the full screen view of it is on the television, and then the more close-up, intricate view is on the Wii U control pad.
Yeah, it's just like a zoomed-in version of just where your character is on that giant maze. And so I watched the bigger screen and just used the gamepad as, just the tilting device that it was, as opposed to watching the gamepad. And I actually did better by watching the television than I did on the gamepad, which I thought that was interesting considering you're supposed to use a gamepad as it's the Wii U. So there's that. And then I also played...
do what you will with that information.
And then I also played Sweet Day, Animal Crossing Sweet Days.
Oh god! How good could a fucking Animal Crossing game be, even on a new system?
Okay,
it was a mini game.
Yeah,
it's a mini game. Basically, the way that it works is you are playing against. It's a 5-player game, which is interesting. This is the new dynamic with the Wii U, is that they're 5-player games now. The way that it works is you have all these Animal Crossing characters or your Mii characters, and you go around the room, go around the board with the 4 Wii remotes. They go around the board searching for candy. They eat this candy and put it in their heads for some reason, and their heads get bigger. And as your head gets bigger, you slow down. As you slow down, it makes it more easier for you to be caught by the guards, and the guards are controlled by the gamepad, and the gamepad. You use it to both of the thumbsticks to control 2 guards on the game board. And as the guards get further apart from each other, the gamepad's view zooms in and out respectively. But it's actually really interesting and slightly difficult. You have to wrap your brain around it because you're controlling 2 different characters with each individual thumbstick. So it's, having to corner them and sandwich people in corners and stuff and catching them was I mean, I won. The guards almost every time won.
But it's the guards I won as well.
Yeah, so... Awesome. Yeah, high five. So that was Animal Crossing Sweet Day. But that was... Yeah, I ground...
I enjoyed that game.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
But what does that have to do with Animal Crossing? Like, how is that related? Setting.
It's the art style.
Nintendo Land, is basically the concept is it's a proof of concept for a lot of the techniques behind the Wii U and what you can do with the control pad, and or at least it's supposed to be. And the idea is that it's a virtual theme park in which you play a bunch of different games based on popular franchises, and it's actually developed by the guy who develops Animal Crossing. So there's there was definitely going to be an Animal Crossing game. So there's Animal Crossing. There's I think there's 12 games in total, but of the 5, they showed 5 here. They showed Donkey Kong, Luigi's Mansion, Zelda, Animal Crossing, and the Ninja Castle thing.
Yep, and that was the Nintendo. That was the Nintendo Land. Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah, we talk about that more in part 2.
Okay, let me when you played all the new Wii U stuff, was there absolutely anything that you were like, I can't wait for this to come out, or that kind of blew your mind, or you just, you know, was there anything that just kind of stood out and you're like, fuck, that's amazing?
There was stuff that blew our minds.
There's definitely one, yeah.
Yeah, there was stuff that blew our minds. No, it's fine. There was stuff that blew our minds, but the thing was is that it's also coming out for the 3DS, and that was Scribblenauts. That was the only thing that blew our minds and was like, wow, this is incredible. This technology is amazing. We have to have this. But that's also coming out for the 3DS.
And it's like the Scribblenauts. Like, I don't know if the 3DS version will be, you know, feature parity with the Wii U version. But once again, Scribblenauts was another example of a game's just being mirrored on the gamepad and not actually doing something separate on the gamepad. Game blew our minds, but it's not at least my mind, but definitely not reliant on, you know, the new hardware stuff that the Wii U can do at all. Like, you could do it on the 360 or the PS3 if you really wanted to.
I was going to say, Zombie U impressed me, but it's one of those that it didn't necessarily, like, if I missed it, I wouldn't, you know, regret it. It was pretty cool the way that it's neat to see that Ubisoft has grasped the new control schemes and abilities right away, as opposed to last time with Red Steel.
Yeah, this time it actually seems like they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Downham, you heard something about Nintendo, right?
Yeah. Apparently, one of the things that Nintendo announced was how at any point you could post, like, I guess kind of like tweet or status update something about the game via what they're calling the Miiverse. But during an interview, it was announced by them that they expect to have every message subject to moderation before posting.
What?
That they want to moderate. There's a three-tier moderation process. The first is via an algorithm, which flags stuff, you know, via whatever crazy Orwellian, you know, algorithms they have. The second version is having someone read every single post before they're published. And then the third is having people be able to flag inappropriate content.
You're actually missing the fourth one, Matt, which is you need everyone's friend code that you can tweet to, or else they don't get it.
And what's crazy about this is it's right from Iwata. So it's straight out of, you know, the president of Nintendo's mouth, pretty much. And he said, quote, "Personally, I think 30 minutes should be acceptable for the amount of time that it takes to post something and actually have it show up."
And once again, that goes back to them not seriously going back after the hardcore gamer, because despite saying that initially, we saw all the videos involving families and the grandmother playing the game and all these other things. And that comes down to their concern about making sure that the Miiverse is as clean as possible. So it all comes back to the whole family casual gaming thing.
Like, it sounds to me that Nintendo's going basically the opposite way that everyone wants them to go. Like, everyone wants more open-ended technology and freedom and do whatever you want. And it's like Nintendo has suddenly become this company where it's like, we're cracking down on everything. You can't say certain things. You can't do certain things. Everything is screened. Everything is under control. Like, that, to me, is what Nintendo is becoming. I don't know if anyone else gets that sense or not.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We went into major depth the first day podcast about what we felt about Nintendo and why we're really worried about them. But it didn't, you know, 3 days of E3 and we're not, our opinions haven't changed.
They're terrified of an Xbox Live like service. Can you imagine, you know, playing like some sort of Wii Tennis online and, you know, then some Xbox Live like user decides to start screaming through at the grandmother trying to play Wii Tennis on the other end?
Yeah, but it works. And like, it works from a sales perspective and from a customer perspective. Who cares about that one or two people that get fucked over? It works for everyone else.
Yeah.
Well, Nintendo is, they're kind of like Apple in that regard, where they have a serious hard-on for controlling everything. Like, they do not find it acceptable to have something, an infrastructure, that they cannot have every little detail go their way.
Yep.
And what's weird about that is how it extends to communication. Like, obviously, every system, be it PlayStation Network or Xbox Live, is controlled by Microsoft and Sony to the nth degree. Like, they control it. But what the key difference is Nintendo wants to control what you say. You know, yeah. Microsoft has those things that say, hey, guys, we're not responsible for what some dickbags out there will say to you on Xbox Live. That's not our fault. You accept that when you accept the terms of agreement and everything.
Right. Yeah.
But Nintendo is like, we care so much about making this Candyland, you know, that we do not even want you to. It's like sheltering us from, like, reality.
Yeah.
You know, they want to make this kind of distortion field that everything that happens in Nintendo world is perfect, which. You show me a family of people that don't say fuck when they miss a bowling pin and we bowling. And I will show you the Nintendo world. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just silly. You know, like, how many times have you been over playing Wii at somebody's house and they're, and you guys are just speaking like, you know, Leave it to Beaver or Pleasantville or something. Like, it just doesn't work.
Shucks.
No, hello, darn. Dear gentlemen. A game of bowling?
Well,
yes. I mean,
the problem is allow opening up that, like, kind of wide world of, you know, online gaming and like trying to advertise to like a hardcore gamer thing for Nintendo is like, that doesn't show like the money people that there's any new money out there, because those hardcore gamers are going to buy games no matter what. All that family product is, no matter how many Wii's they sold, there's still always this concept of the family who doesn't play the games normally, and thus they are new money, you know. Yeah. What I mean, that the ability to create future money. So there's just no profitability for Nintendo. Or, I mean, eventually they'll realize that that's where, you know, the profitability was. But
let's be honest here. Like, at what point are you going to be playing, you know, a game on Wii U, get stuck, and go, sure, I'll try this Miiverse, post something, and be like, wait a minute, I have to sit here for 30 fucking minutes until someone actually can respond to this, and then that takes 30 minutes?
Yeah, it's an hour. It's like,
and I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm just going to pull up a fucking iPad on my iPad or my iPhone that I have right next to me and Google it.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like you would ever get stuck on a Nintendo game these days anyway.
Yeah, they're practically, they have all of those modes. That
they're all mini games.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's stupid.
Well, and also there's the irony of Nintendo highlighting in this press conference that it was definitely for the gamers. They were highlighting the games. And in their montage of third-party content, there is an awful lot of super gore. However, it doesn't actually translate to an environment conducive for hardcore gamers.
Yeah, they may have showcased them in a video, but then it was none of the ones that they brought out on stage and really, you know, talked about. You know, any videos that were later shown were that family environment once again.
Yeah, it's like
I will say they did have Ninja Gaiden 3 at their booth, and that is a hella fucking
Since the newer Ninja Gaiden had zero dismemberment. Like, there was no dismemberment in the new one. But it's still
slicing dudes like cray-cray, you know?
Yeah.
Huh.
Crepe.
Brandon, you're a Ninja Gaiden fan, like crazy, so...
Yeah, well, the problem is the first game was amazing and the kind of like...
Suck.
Yeah, and then I heard there's a new one coming out. I just didn't know what system it was for that they were developing. I guess the Wii U.
No, the Wii U is a port of 3 that just came out on PS3 and
360.
Except it has dismemberment, yeah.
Well, the only thing with the Wii U version is that they're going to use the Wii U gamepad to throw the shurikens.
Well, they're also probably going to use Wii Motion Plus for really precise sword control, and that is awesome.
Yeah, so. But it doesn't matter with Ninja Gaiden, that game.
Do you know how fast the fighting is in Ninja Gaiden? No one's arm is going to be fast enough to do anything with a sword.
Yeah.
Like, for real. And then you switch to shurikens while you're in the air right after you swung a sword 7 times? Fuck you, you're going to have a workout in 5 goddamn minutes and just quit the game.
Wii U Fit Plus.
Ninja Gaiden.
My arms are so fucking buff.
Well, since Nintendo's got a lot of control, let's switch gears over to a company that really relishes in having no control whatsoever.
Dude, that's a good segue.
Right? We're talking about CCP's Dust 514.
Holy balls.
Very oh, God, cool. Yeah. Please tell me about this thing, because I've been waiting.
These
guys are the real deal. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, last year they showed us a proof of concept about what they wanted Dust 514 to be, and this year they are ready. It is a game. It's a first-person shooter mercenary game that is actually in the EVE Online world, where the spaceships in EVE Online, with dictating intergalactic commerce, are in fact actually employing mercenary groups, which you in Dust 514 are a part of and are actually actively pursuing the goals of other players in this completely separate game.
Wow. So if you do really badly, will certain ships or people not hire you? If they see your shitty mercenary rating, then you'll just be like, oh, I gotta do solo missions until I get hired again.
Yep.
I think that's a very possible situation, yeah.
Oh my god, that's badass.
Yep. And they can work together, people can work together as companies, and the battles can be planned out by the people on EVE Online. They can decide what key points on the battlefield they want to capture, what waypoints they want the Marines to capture, and then it's the Marines' job to go ahead and do that.
The mercenaries.
That's
to go
so
ahead
cool.
and do that. Yeah, it's incredible.
What's very neat about talking to these guys is where most developers will say, you know, or be tight-lipped about where they want to see their game going and what kind of features they want to implement. The devs at CCP, at least the ones we spoke to, were very, very, very excited to tell us what they want to do.
They were cool as hell. They were being real with us. They were casual, and they were completely energetic about what they've done.
Yeah, they're super excited about the game they've created. They love this universe.
They're so genuine.
They really are. Matt, what were some of the things that they were... Well, first of all, one of the most exciting things about this thing is that it's free to play.
Which, you know, to when I hear something that about a game that's free to play, it both kind of excites me and makes me nervous at the same time, because A, hey, that's cool that I don't have to spend money to play it. I can, you know, try it out for free. But B, how are you going to nickel and dime me, you know,
right,
when it comes time to actually, you know, open up my wallet and make it, you know, happen.
Okay, the game, you probably have to buy it initially, right? Do they mention anything about... Oh, really?
It is a free download. And the way it sounded to me is that really the only time you're going to have to spend real world money is if you don't want to grind. So like, say you want to upgrade your weapon, and you don't want to like earn what the in-game currency, which is called ISK. If you don't want to gain that by like playing 1,000 matches to upgrade your stuff, you can buy that kind of currency via real world purchases.
Oh, that's kind of makes me sad, actually.
But, you know, what he did say was that it's not like you can buy something that no one else can get. It's just a paying to make it happen faster.
That's and true. It just makes me think, well, everyone just suddenly on the first day buy all these upgrades and everyone's just going to have the best shit right off the bat.
But that's, I mean, that's
that
the thing
doesn't
about
necessarily mean that you're good at the game, though.
Yeah, that's the thing about the EVE universe is that that's what it's about.
Your employers will hire you based on your scores, not on your equipment. You may, however, look better to them. What's interesting about it is it's actually kind of a real world scenario. For example, your base level mercenary won't necessarily be equipped with the hottest shit, but if he's got the skills, well, that's great. However, a well-to-do mercenary may, in fact, or even a soldier in the U.S. military might not actually be provided the equipment that he or she desires to have in the field and, in fact, buy it themselves. So they will have the special flak jacket that the military won't provide them. So that's actually, you know, basically the same situation we have here.
And the cool thing about this game as well is that, okay, so you purchase all this stuff in the beginning. You have all this great shit. And then you go out and you go and fight stuff. But the thing is that the people who are working their way up are probably going to be banding together, creating relationships because they're at that lower tier and working together as a group, getting this better tech. So in that way, they are creating a group, a corporation that can work together as a group to do whatever it is the EVE Online players want them to do. So the relationships are getting... It's not just about the tech. It's also about creating relationships in this game.
Mm. This sounds too good to be free. Most of the games most of the games out right now that are free to play, they are, but there's also a lot of like micro payments and micromanagement. It's like, well, this helmet doesn't do anything, but it looks really awesome. You know, you pay a dollar, you can get this sweet helmet. And it's like,
well, that's
I'm sure they're going to do a lot of that.
Yeah, well, he also said, you know, hey, maybe you want to make your character look different and stand out in a different way. For, you know, real world money, you can spend a few dollars and customize the paint job of your armor or get special helmets or armor pieces that don't necessarily make you stronger. It's just visual customization.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. I like that.
Which, in all honesty, if you're providing the game for free, you know, they have to make money somehow. You know what I mean?
So, I feel like
I'm just confused because it's a free to play game, but it's on only the PS3.
Well, I'm sure there was some kind of deals signed with Sony.
Wait, is it?
Are there any free-to-play games on consoles to this date. I'm not aware of any.
DC,
so
wait, there is. DC there is the yeah DC.
Yeah, that well that oh, didn't okay. launch that way.
Right, but it is now. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah.
But as far as it's kind of a precedent that they're setting here, with
yeah.
you know that kind of free to play shooter, kind of like Team Fortress did, and all these other games they're doing now, but on a console and one that hooks into an existing game with millions of players.
Yeah, I'm actually really impressed because I thought it would be released on PC, if anything, or both, but I didn't realize it was just PS3 and that you're playing with PC users. That is crazy. And then the fact that it's free is actually, I don't believe it because it's Sony and I don't think they would let that happen, but who knows?
They're also making a companion app for the PlayStation Vita, which lets
Thank God.
Which lets you manage like your contracts and communications and messages with the Eve players from your PlayStation Vita on the go.
Yay, and people are developing stuff for the Vita finally.
Oh. And they also mentioned that they, you know, down the line, they want to extend the kind of thing you can do on you know, mobile devices. And he kind of used Farmville as like a joking example. But like being able to, you know, harvest resources or something like that on the go without having to be at your PlayStation or PC to do it.
I feel as though CCP stands to make some money also, in addition to the, you know, the microtransactions, just from additional EVE Online subs that this game could garner.
Yeah, this is a very interesting... honestly, I don't think there's been anything like this before.
Oh, no.
It's a brand new game hooking into an existing infrastructure, and all of these different players are interacting with each other in a way that just frankly hasn't existed.
It's taking Wii U's asymmetrical gameplay concept to like a completely new level. It's two different games on two different systems interacting together.
And let's be honest here, like we all played it. It was actually kind of fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, none of this matters if the game is shit.
Yeah, right? The graphics were great. The FPS like felt and really solid.
I played it for a good 15 minutes, and I was like, this is a pretty good shooter. Like, yeah, there was nothing that stood out as poor or you know, rushed or anything. It felt solid.
It felt like a futuristic Battlefield with, you know, like, but in, you have a... not just squad members, but you have a general who has been through shit, you know, commanding you.
Exactly.
I mean, maybe not as polished as like a standalone Battlefield game is, but definitely.
So like 1943. I
mean, yeah.
Yeah. Definitely for a free-to-play downloadable game, it was totally awesome.
Yeah. The community aspect of it is just incredible. I mean,
And also, play zones have as much or as little as much or as little lawlessness as you want, just like in Eve. You can either go to a zone that is highly moderated or a zone that has absolutely zero moderation whatsoever and piracy and griefing run rampant.
Yeah, exactly.
And oh my God, that's awesome.
Yeah, and the cool thing about this thing that I was telling the creative director so much about is that, and that I was so excited about this game is that, and I've never played Eve or anything like that, but how much they were into the community, how much they clearly listened to the gamers, how much they clearly listen to the community and take that feedback and incorporate that into the game. They're so excited to give the community the beta so that they can then learn from what the users want from the game and then fix it. So when they release it, it's what they want, and they will continue to change the games based on the community's support and feedback.
See, Colin, you've never played Eve, so you may not know, but it is the realest space game, the most realistic space game that could ever possibly exist. It's so real that you are incredibly lonely because you're in space and you could be a million miles from anyone. So they understand how important it is to find other people and have a good community because it's lonely in space. And when you find a port with a lot of people, you're like, yeah, I'm going to talk to people and do shit now. So they really
on Earth.
Value it. Yeah.
So. I'm lonely here on Earth.
Well, it's only because you're in the forever alone zone. That's why.
That's true.
Yeah. Now, speaking of being alone, Cap had to leave our group.
I had a solo mission, guys.
He did.
Man, all of these segues are fucking awesome.
Yeah, he did. He had to leave our group and go into the fortress.
Yeah, the Bethesda fortress. Every year, Bethesda Softworks puts up a big fucking wall and says, yo, motherfuckers, we got some hot shit. And whoever you are, you can't fucking see it without an appointment.
It's true.
For the last 3 years we've gone to E3, we've always managed to find a way in. We always figure weeks and it's going to be easy. Like, we have a good relationship with them, but I don't know. They really love the exclusivity. So
yeah, there's like posted guards at the doors and stuff like that. It's kind of ridiculous.
It is pretty fucking ridiculous. So this year I got at the very end of E3, I got in. It could only be one of us. So I got in there, and what they were showing off was Elder Scrolls Online and a game called Dishonored. So
wait, Elder Scrolls Online?
Yeah. Have you heard about this, Brandon?
Fuck you.
No. Never heard of it, huh?
No, I've been busy, but that sounds awesome. So they didn't actually display any of the awesome expansion stuff coming out for Skyrim, but rather a new Elder Scrolls experience.
Yes, and this new Elder Scrolls experience they've been working on for the past 5 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
It is a true to form MMO. Thing about Elder Scrolls Online is, if you played Morrowind or Oblivion, there's always a sense of, oh, this is kind of MMO-like. Why isn't this an MMO? And then,
and then
once you get to the Skyrim era, you realize that I don't really want the MMO anymore. But but then here it is. Now, after all this time of thinking, there could be an MMO, and then you decide you don't want it, and now there is one. And it's also not produced directly by Bethesda. In fact, it's produced by ZeniMax Online. And I didn't know what they were responsible for. However, now I do. And it's actually something to be a little bit excited for, because some of the guys working on this game are the same guys who created Dark Ages of Camelot.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. God damn it. Damn it, damn it. That means 1,000 hours of riding a horse and then getting chased by whole towns of skeletons. That's awesome, but oh my God. Okay.
Okay, so Dark Ages of Camelot, Brandon's reaction may be confusing to listeners. That was, in fact, a positive reaction.
do you want me to tell you real quick a short story from the days when I was playing Dark Age of Camelot? Should we save that for another time?
I'm sure it'll come up again, but please, I know this story, and it's good. Go for it.
I mean, there's so many. That was one of the best MMOs I've ever played, even to this day. It just, things didn't have borders. You could wander off and get lost for hours. Essentially, I was riding a horse from one end of the continent to the other in Albion. So, for some reason, I remember, I accidentally, halfway into my trip, hit the space bar, which then jumped me off of my horse. As I ran after it, it kept running until it, you know, I lost sight of it. So I'm in the middle of this continent. It literally takes you hours to walk from one way to the other. So I start walking through the forest going, okay, there's got to be a town. I don't see anything. I'm walking through the woods. Suddenly I look behind me and the really, really tall redwood looking trees are chasing me. And have faces now. So trees are chasing me, and I'm like, fuck, these are high levels. I'm like level 5. These are like level 40, and I'm running, and I'm running, and they start throwing shit at me, and I'm running. In the distance, okay, I finally get to a field, and then I see a town in the distance, and I'm like, oh my god, finally, some NPC or people are gonna fucking save me. I run and run and run. I get to the town. I walk into the center of the town, which takes me a minute before I realize I look around, and all the NPCs are actually dead. They're either ghosts or skeletons. A few of them turn around and start walking towards me, and then they start running towards me, where then I proceed to turn around and bolt the fuck out of the town. So these trees arrive at the city that have been chasing me, and now the ghosts and skeletons are fucking chasing me, and there's about 30 or 40 of them chasing me out of the city. None of them have like magic they can shoot at me, so I'm just running my ass off with auto run. I finally find an area that ended up being the noob area, where you're level 1 and you start off, and I keep running. As I'm running, there's like 30 or 40 people that just started the game, and the skeletons who are running through the woods are now slaughtering all these level 1s and level 2s. And just like there's an all-out war of these high-level skeletons just kicking the shit out of these noobs and beating them, and I'm running laughing my ass off. And I finally got away because they were just slaughtering everyone every time they spawned and every time there was a new player. It was amazing, and then I logged out. And that was one of my many stories from Dark Age of Camelot.
That's like the best story ever.
No, it that game had so many great experiences that no other MMO has ever, in my eyes, lived up to it. You can't get that in World of Warcraft. You can't get that in any game. So, yeah. Glad that these people are making something again.
Is it going to be Dark Ages of Camelot? I couldn't say.
But well, times have changed, so yeah. We'll see.
So with me, I don't really want this game. I don't want Elder Scrolls Online, so I'm a bit skeptical. Why would I be interested? The game takes place 1,000 years before Skyrim, and where it actually sits, you know, the history of the world of Tamriel has been very carefully outlined. It's been expanded on and developed since the first Elder Scrolls game, and it's constantly been growing. But it's actually at this point pretty well defined. So this takes place in a period that's never been explored before. It's an era of chaos and civil war before the great unification of the reign of the Septims. And in this world, there's basically three main factions on various sides of the entire continents of Tamriel, and then in the middle is Cyrodiil, which is the primary continent that you may remember from Oblivion. What this game offers, and this is really going to pull on the heartstrings of any diehard Elder Scrolls fan, this game offers for the first time since the early games a look at the entire world of Tamriel. You get everything. Once you know, all the games are now so big, then all they can really do is provide you the world of Skyrim or the world of Cyrodiil. Like, they have so much space that they want to play around with, you know, in a continent-sized region, that they can't give you the whole world anymore. They used to back in the good old days, but they can't anymore. But this game does, you know, to an extent. Except that, you know, you'll go back to the I can't remember the name of it. It's buried so far back in previous Elder Scrolls games. But say that the desert world, the desert continent where the Khajiit come from.
That's elsewhere.
And then the swamp world where the Argonians come from. So this game has Morrowind, Cyrodiil, the lands of Skyrim.
That's crazy.
It has got
then
everything.
There's like Quagmire or whatever it's called, where like there's a weird god that constantly changes the way the continent looks and shifts like the ground and the sky and everything, which is cool. So.
And the game itself, graphically, it's basically where Oblivion was, basically. A little more and a little less, depending on what we're talking about. The gameplay itself, though, is pretty exciting because it is action-based combat, much like DC Universe Online. It's something you would want to play with a control pad, which is really great. It's not turn-based combat. It's not 100% the combat that we know and love from Oblivion and Skyrim, but it is actually, you know, an action-oriented combat system, and it's very solid. It's always great to see an MMO not be boring as hell when you're fighting somebody.
Okay, good, because I actually hated the combat system in Oblivion, so I would enjoy this better.
Yeah, Oblivion had pretty average combat. This is true.
It was much improved in Skyrim, but so it's very actiony, and all the battles I saw really involved warrior characters mostly. So I don't really know how the different classes play out. Then there is a PvP system, and what's interesting about it is that it's regional. So I don't believe you'll be going into Cyrodiil during any of the main quests exactly, or maybe you will, but I didn't notice it. Basically, all the PvP stuff happens in Cyrodiil because the way the continents or the world of Tamriel is positioned is that Cyrodiil, the like capital area, is right in the middle of everything. So that's where all the major civil war battles are going to be happening. So what they showed us as far as an example of PvP were massive medieval wars in the land of Cyrodiil, like a shit ton of players on screen, and that's the PvP areas. They say they want it to be they don't want it to be you wandering around and able to just kill whomever or, you know, whatever. They want it to actually be like engaging and exciting.
Wow, I really wonder how the skill system is going to work. So
yeah, that I do not know. One thing that was very interesting to me, because I am very, you know, I want to play in these lands again. I want to experience this part of Elder Scrolls history, but I'm not that big on MMOs. And I really, you know, I could care about the social commitments of going into, you know, dungeons that are hard enough that you really need to be with a group there and all that. They say the main story can be played 100% solo.
Oh wow! Oh,
awesome.
That is really awesome.
That's very different and unique. And to be fair, Cap, you probably don't have enough free time to do it anyway. If you did like it, so.
Yeah, it's true. But that is hugely appealing to me as someone who's just kind of on the fringes of all this. I think, oh man.
But what's weird is you have to pay monthly to play that on your own.
Yeah, but I could.
Are you serious?
Well, probably. Huh. They haven't really entered into that conversation yet. But you know, it's like most MMOs. It's probably a pay to play situation.
They don't exist without it.
So it's coming out 2013, PCs, Macs, and they said it's very laptop friendly. Their ethos for the game is go where you want to go, do what you want to do, and play how you want to play.
So I could just be a blacksmith and like people will come to me for good weapons because I've only been doing that for 1,000 hours.
They didn't elaborate on it, but they said that crafting is a very important part of the game mechanic.
Yeah.
Isn't that awesome. Like a monkey song or something? Go where you want to go. Do what you want to do.
I don't know.
With no, it's whoever, Adam's
that's
family.
Dolly.
Whoever yep. you want to do it with.
Speaking of crafting app.
Yes, Matt?
We played an iOS game.
Did you now?
Oh, that was a segue. I got it.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I'm sorry. I forgot we can talk about this now. Yeah,
that involves some crafting and forging, didn't we?
We certainly.
Yeah, I did a segue.
You did, and it was good. I just fucked it up. Yeah.
Are you crafting in a mine?
No, this is not a minecrafting game. Though you may battle some monsters in some mines. Yeah, do it, Matt. Open it wide.
Basically, we checked out the new Infinity Blade Dungeons game from Epic for iPad. And Cap and I got a chance to play it. Matt, did you get a chance to play it too? I don't remember.
No, I was observing it. It did look pretty neat.
I mean, basically, to boil it down at the very finest level, it's kind of like a light version of Diablo with touch controls that also has a mining and forging system built in.
Oh, so what you're saying is Diablo is better because it is.
What? Well, but it's also not really – Diablo is also not on an iPad. You know what I mean?
This is meant to be a casual sort of dungeon crawl experience game, except that it actually happens to look very good and have a lot of unique gameplay elements to it. But it is a much simpler game than Diablo. It's meant for like a casual dungeon crawl experience.
Yeah, it's meant for people who don't like real video games.
Well,
it's a different. I mean, like I said, you can't play Diablo on the on your iPad for 10 minutes, you know, on the toilet.
That's why you got a laptop, asshole.
But yeah, that's what it's designed specifically for the iPad, and so it's designed for people who play games on the iPad. So the levels are designed to be only take like 5 minutes or six.
So it's designed
minutes.
For people who have to take a dump.
Sure.
Which is everybody.
Which is everyone. We all need to take a dump.
I won't argue with that.
Okay, so here's what's cool about it. Aside from being the touch controls are really solid, the graphics are good, and the gameplay's fun. But my favorite part, and I think Matt's favorite part too, probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that as you're playing the game, you can collect some ore deposits, which is kind of a micro game built in based on which dictates how much ore you get and what kind of ore you get. And the different kinds of ore you get will enable you to craft different kinds of weapons. But it's not just enough that you have the right quantity of things, because then there's a mini game devoted to weapon making. And it's not that you have to get it right to make the weapon. You can still kind of fuck up and you'll still make the weapon. So you can make an imperfect weapon, and that's yours. That's what you stick with, unless you want to like forge it again or something. Basically, it's unique. Like your weapon is based on your skill.
Like there's a possibility of having I don't want to say endless, but a large variety of variable stats for your weapons, because how that weapon comes out is 100% dependent on how well you do in the forging process. So, like, part of the mini game was we had to tap parts of the sword to hit our forging hammer onto it to flatten out the steel. But if you didn't hit them at the right time or you missed some of them, that's going to affect your stats. So if you get every hammer hit correct, you're going to forge, like, the most perfect sword you could have forged out of that process. So you kind of, like... It's kind of like all of the loot that you work with, you're kind of partly responsible for how epic of loot it is.
It's like actually gives the crit to chance and makes it like dependent upon your like reflex, like your own actual reflexes, which is cool. Instead of a percentage number, it's actually based on you as a human being.
So it's pretty neat. You know, the gameplay was very cool. It was swipe to attack, and you could do all these different gestures, like double tap an enemy to fly toward it. Cap made this like incredible axe that was just destroying everything on screen.
Well, really, they did fess up that for the sake of the demo, they gave us some overpowered weapons, but it was
but you were murdering everything.
It was satisfying. Let's just say that.
Actually really gorgeous.
I spun around and there was lava everywhere and lots of things died. That's a short version.
I mean, I was kind of blown away during the part where you were cooling the weapon off and there were sparks everywhere. Like, it looks really amazing for what, you know, you typically would see on a tablet. Like, it's getting, you know, close to looking like what the Vita looks like or other, you know, kind of high power handheld systems.
I actually did they show it to you on the new iPad with like the one where they boast like the really good HD, like really high def screens?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, I actually had a chance to speak with one of the developers of the game, so let's go ahead and play that really short interview.
Hey guys, it's Cap.
And it's Matt Rex.
And we're here in the Epic Games office booth thing with Maury Mountain. We just played a game for the iPad called Infinity Blade Dungeons, and it's a isometric dungeon crawler with a forging element, which makes it really unique. Maury, what can you tell me about how this game came into development? What's the core concept behind it?
We were just looking to make a fun action RPG dungeon crawling type game within the Infinity Blade universe, and we were just looking to make it a super fun game for the iPad that's within this genre.
I'm actually unfamiliar with the Infinity Blade universe. What's its history?
So what year it was, but a couple years ago, Infinity Blade debuted on the Apple stage as a first-person swiping game. And over the years, they released Infinity Blade 2, and now we wanted to create an dungeon-crawling experience within the Infinity Blade universe.
Very cool. It does look like a very competitive title for if a Diablo player wants a more casual but definitely involved experience on the iPad. They can totally get it on the go. And one of the coolest things we saw was a forging element in which I guess the main character of the game is meant to not just be a warrior but also a blacksmith. And you create your own weapons in a very unique way. What was that development process like? Was that part of the core idea when you started working on this title?
Yeah, we really wanted forging to be a focus of the game, as well as going into dungeons and collecting resources and just action RPGing and having fun. That forging was a big part that we wanted to focus on.
Yeah, I always like in a game where, you know, you'll go through an area, you'll get your gold, you'll get your equipment. But then you also can get some items that are going to help you make something better for yourself. And this is a really unique opportunity to kind of get hands-on, because you can actually kind of screw up making a weapon. It could either be perfect, or you could not do the minigame well, but then the end result is you have your weapon, and it's yours, and you made it. And if you didn't do it well enough, then that's just you, and I guess you have to remake your weapon?
Yeah, correct. As an apprentice, you are constantly learning, and I guess we want to play that into you as a player, too. You're learning, and as you get better, you make better stuff, and as you keep going, you'll level up and get to make awesome stuff.
When do you think this game's going to get released?
Sometime later this year.
Very cool. Thanks, man.
You're welcome.
So we actually saw that game at the Epic Games booth. That wasn't all we saw at the Epic Games booth. Something we've actually had to keep quiet about until the specific day and time. And if this episode is out, then that day and time has arrived. We got a live demo of the Unreal 4 engine.
What?
No.
That was me sounding surprised, pretending I didn't know you were going to say that. And then I said that to ruin it. Thanks.
Yeah, no, it's all good. So why is this a momentous thing? Well, the Unreal Engine has shaped the face of gameplay as far as like advanced graphics, exciting things happening on the screen, realism, depth, lighting, and everything. And Unreal 3 changed everything. Unreal 4 changes everything again.
Yes.
I'm really looking forward to seeing the footage.
I can tell you what we saw, and I don't know what will be available upon this announcement, because it's all hinging on, I think, what is it, Matt? Spike?
Yeah, I think Jeff Keighley and Spike went over to Epic and kind of filmed some behind-the-scenes stuff. We actually have access to all the stuff they're going to show. It's on, so maybe you can actually grab some of that from the FTP link that we have.
It will be online in one way, shape, or form.
Right.
This video, and what we saw was this incredible scene of a molten rock god awakening from his chamber in a mountain fortress, and that was this video they showed us using the Unreal 4 engine, and then they broke that entire scene down into what was basically the digital set. And showed us how the real lighting works, how you can make an object metallic and have all the different elements of light bounce. It's just completely realistic. It's hard to put into words how, other than just saying this looks totally realistic, and explain to you all the different things we were looking at, like reflective surfaces and just how good they look.
It's like one of the hardest things to describe to someone in words without just saying, look at this fucking video and look how crazy this
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I mean, like...
It's like, look around your bedroom and look at how real it looks. Well,
they did apply many real-life principles on the ideas that materials both, you know, can cast and or reflect light. So they just kind of applied that and showed how manipulating, you know, one thing, you know, leads every other object in the room to account for it realistically.
Yeah.
I think the most impressive thing in that entire demo was the example of how your eyes adjust to pure darkness or pure light.
Mm. Yeah.
So basically what they did is they took us into a room that had three giant windows open. So there was a lot of glare and it was a very bright environment. And then they immediately triggered all the windows to shut. And just like in real life, if that happens, everything is pure pitch black for a few seconds because your eyes don't have time to adjust. So in this demo, that they actually emulate that. So if all the lights go out, you can't see anything until your you know, quote unquote eyes adjust to the light that's actually in the room.
That makes me so fucking happy because there's so many graphics cards and graphics engines that have tried to simulate that so yeah. far, but really it's just kind of trickery and it's not that good. So this yeah. is very exciting.
I mean, that was the moment that I was sitting in the room and I just went like, holy fuck. Like it was yeah. the exact, it looked exactly like it does when that happens with my actual eyes.
Yeah, it was incredible. And the thing about that was really, really, really special was that it wasn't, you were talking about computers. It wasn't running on like a super crazy computer. It was running in real time on like, a shuttle PC. So it didn't sound like it was like this mega beast, and it didn't look like a mega beast computer.
Okay, either. No, they're, okay, the people who make the Unreal Engines, their shuttle computers are probably better than all the computers in my house tied together.
More so like people, space shuttle computers.
Basically what he said was, the most expensive piece of hardware in this computer that we're running this on is the graphics card.
And, like, everything else was kind of
standard high-end, medium range stuff.
And it was
a good $10,000 graphics card. But everything else
wasn't like that. No, he said it was just like a GTX 900 or one of the most recent cards.
It's a high-end current market card.
Yeah. Mm. Well, because my problem with it was I saw the like a tech demo of it like almost a year ago, and I immediately was like, okay, PS3 cannot run that. 360 cannot run that. The Wii U, when it comes out, cannot run that. Like, no, who the fuck can run it?
I don't think we'll see current-gen consoles running it just because current-gen consoles have so little RAM.
Like, I don't think Xbox the Wii U is going to run it.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, the Xbox only has 512 megabytes of RAM in there. Like, which, yeah. when you think about it, that's absolutely insane with the graphics it pulls off.
Yeah. But that's actually more than the PS3, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, it's so small. So I think just the hardware limitations alone are one of the reasons that it won't be able to run it. But, you know, I think PC users might be able to see the results of this engine a lot quicker than console
users. And speaking of it, you know, seeing the results quicker, I thought the most impressive thing was the dev tools they showed off.
Oh,
which, yeah. They were dropping into play modes so that they could see how the game, you know, you make any changes, and then you would hit just a button that's play, and it throws you into that moment in the game without having to, like, you know, re-render the game full screen.
Yeah, that's very cool. I mean,
it was immediate, and then you could just drop back out.
The node-based stuff was incredible, too. Like, they had the statue, and they basically showed the dev tools where they had a visual workflow of, like, if I interact with the statue, it checks for X. And if X happens, then it does Y. And if Y happens, this does this. And they showed it in this real-time kind of, like, liquid flowing through pipes, like, visualization of all of these, like, conditions happening at once.
Yeah, the graphical user interface for these dev tools are going to make things so easy to program. It's really,
like,
exciting.
Well, I think that's one of the other real exciting things about seeing an engine like this is it's not just going to look better, but it's going to give devs the ability to make better games for us.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the tools are so much better.
And with a what is conceivably a quicker turnaround. Now, I mean, some, you know, there's always been the critics of saying that the Unreal Engine already is so, like, market, you know, like, it's so heavy in the market that it kind of stymies or, you know, stifles creativity in some respects. But it still is exciting, the idea that if, you know, there is an idea that can run well, you know, by
basically that there'll be quick turnaround on ideas that can be turned out.
Did they demo any sort of form of destruction in it?
No, there was no really destruction elements.
There were, however, lots of really uncanny and fascinating particle effects.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like a bunch of weird globules of gel floating, like hundreds of them floating in a room with varying light properties, and how they all were able to display in the field of vision with different amounts of light in the room. And they're definitely, when destruction comes up, it'll definitely kick ass.
Yeah,
it's one of those, seeing that demo is one of those things that makes me very excited for the future of gaming, because it's only going to get better, you know. And it's hard to believe, because you play some games now that you can't believe how good they look, but in another couple of years, it's going to be insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. I remember waiting for Half-Life 2 to come out and watching videos of it going, oh my god, you can shoot a railing and like splinters of wood pop out and break.
Yeah.
And now I go back and play it, I'm like, how did I play this game? Yeah.
Speaking of the future of gaming, Cap saw another Bethesda game that's going to be like the future.
I did, and again, not a proprietary Bethesda produced thing, but they're distributing it
At the Bethesda booth.
Yeah, at the Bethesda booth. It's a game called Dishonored, and it's produced by Arkane Studios. The guys who were working on this game are the same guys who brought you Arx Fatalis, Dark Messiah, BioShock 2, and Deus Ex. It also has the same art director as Half-Life 2.
Oh, Jesus.
So this is a game of...
I wish I knew that. That would have been a better segue.
it's all
yeah,
right, man.
Yeah, it fucking would. Do over.
This is a game of some great pedigree and a lot of buzz at the show. But because they didn't have anything on the floor, it was hard for me to judge and get excited about until I actually saw it. And when I saw it, oh my god. This game is essentially... What if... Assassin's Creed or Metal Gear was a bit more like BioShock and was set in a steampunk city powered by whale oil.
What? That's awesome.
I've always wondered that.
That's been eating away at me.
Yeah, I mean, it's been killing me, that question. What if?
I mean, like, yesterday I woke up going, damn, what if that happened, and what you just said, and then now you're saying it did.
Yes. Yeah. Apparently the game's actually been misquoted as being an open world game. It isn't, but it is in fact quite large. It's a non-linear experience. And basically what I'd say you can compare it to is BioShock if the levels were much larger. You know, BioShock gave you, it was basically episodic gameplay, but it gave you a ton of room to play around in, a bunch of variables of where you could do things, how you could do them, and in which directions you could take. And this is that concept blown up considerably. I guess that I don't really know what the premise of the game is, but basically you're an assassin or someone who's doing a lot of subterfuge and either killings or disarmings.
You've been framed in it for killing the queen, I think.
Story of my life.
Yeah, okay. Well, that under the context of everything I've seen so far, that makes sense. So basically what I saw was just raw gameplay, no plot elements whatsoever. And man, talk about diverse play options. The live demo that they were playing through had essentially everything unlocked. The world is absolutely gorgeous. They've really gone all out with the steampunk world, and it's extremely rich. Lots of interesting variations on technology, new and old, of course, in the style, lots of Victorian London elements to it. And they showed a scenario where they took on a double assassination inside of a bathhouse in two completely different ways. One with stealth and zero kills, so no detections and no kills except for the kills that you're hired to do. And then another one that it was basically using all of the power-ups conceivable, all the weapons, all the special abilities, and murdering everyone in sight.
Did they show you the fish taking over the fish one?
Oh my god, did they? Okay, guys. So there's this game has magic in it, and it's pretty cool. All the things you can do. There's some time slowdown. There's a line of sight teleportation, which is amazing. Like having that ability in a stealth Assassin's Creed kind of game, though this is first person, I must add, it's a first person game, so that makes it even more like BioShock. Line of sight teleportation enables you to do things like here's a guard. You take out the guard and you like you don't kill him. You just subdue him, and then you line of sight teleport to a nearby roof, and then line of sight teleport from that roof to another roof where there's an awning that's kind of covered, and you just dump his body there. Like, you put him over your shoulder and you teleport, 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 dump his body, move on.
So it's Assassin's Creed with God mode on.
Basically, looks super fun. So then there's this other ability which enables you to possess people or animals. And in this case, this bathhouse had about 8 or 9 different ways they said that you could go about getting into it because it's pretty well guarded. And the one that they showed us first was perhaps the most ridiculous and definitely the most innovative. They're gazing down at some of the water outside this building, and there's this big fish in the water. You look at it, you hit the possession button, and you become the fish. Your body essentially like dissolves and becomes one with this fish, and you use the fish to swim through the water, go into a drain pipe, swim up into the sewer system, and then boom, turn back into a person.
So it's not like you mind control the fish, you like are literally in the fish.
Yes. And you can do the same thing to a human being. Basically, you see them, you possess them, and your body ceases to exist, and you're inside of them. And then when you release them, they're either nauseated or disoriented, and your body has reappeared behind them.
You know, it's funny that like I'm already thinking of different ways to play this game, and the first thing that popped into my head is like, instantly possess the person I'm supposed to kill and then jump off a roof. Yep. And then midway into jumping off the roof, jump out of their body and just let them fall.
I saw that.
And it just looks like they killed themselves.
That happened.
I'm so good. That's awesome.
At least it kind of happened. You definitely could have played it that way. This particular balcony didn't have anywhere for you to jump to safety. But basically, there was a guy in a bedroom with about to get it on with a sexy lady wearing a mask, and he possessed the guy. Had him walk to the balcony, lock the door, then he let go of the guy's body. The guy's puking all over the awning, and he does this wind blast to fling him off the balcony into the ocean, and he dies.
Okay, that is amazing, but I have to ask, can you possess the woman he's about to fuck and yes. just let it happen?
Probably not, but yes.
Aww.
The game is super violent. I mean, this wind attack, this guy used the wind attack. He threw this guy against a stairwell, like a metal grating. And I guess it's like, the idea is it's tornado force winds. Dismembered.
Dismembered? Wow.
Yeah.
Strong tornado.
You have a crossbow that can shoot these sleeping darts, or incendiary darts, a gun with different kinds of like Tesla-like electricity bullets and different sorts of things. It's the catalog of everything at your disposal, all the tools and powers are absolutely amazing. And this looks like one of the most fun and exciting and original games. I mean, like, there's a lot I can compare it to, but this specific combination of like storytelling and aesthetic and power-ups and everything, man, it is wild. And I cannot wait to play it.
Will this be the death of Assassin's Creed?
No. It's a very different game. It's a very different game, but I can compare it because of the various opportunities for stealth and movement. I mean, like, BioShock is a game where you can apply a certain amount of finesse, but it's all about brute force, and it doesn't give you, because you're in the city of Rapture and it's underwater, you don't really have the ability to like be Batman, essentially.
Yeah.
So this is basically BioShock if you could be Batman. And it's pretty fucking sweet. It comes out October 9th.
I've seen a few demos of it, demonstrations on streams, but I highly recommend watching the trailer for it because the trailer is well done. Very well done.
Wow. It's called Dishonored, right?
Dishonored, yes.
I'll have to look that up like immediately.
Yeah, Dishonored comes out October 9th in the United States, and man, super, super excited for it. So in a nutshell, that was our E3 experience. If you listen to all three of our podcasts, you'll get all of our various notes throughout the days. And if you check out all of our videos, then you'll see developer interviews with lots of fine points about all the things we've talked about. And in fact, we have a video that's our top 5 things of E3 from this year, based on all the things that we saw and did. Obviously, there's big titles like, you know, Halo 4. Assassin's Creed 3. Oh, and I might add, there's an Assassin's Creed 3 for the PS Vita that is totally unique and tells a story that takes place after Assassin's Creed 3, where you play What is it, Matt? You're a
French, a French African, half woman living in New Orleans.
Wait, did you say a half woman?
Yeah,
a French African half woman.
You play a French woman of African descent in New Orleans.
Okay.
Like,
okay, that makes sense.
Deadliest women are half women.
She's probably Creole.
Yeah,
actually.
Most definitely. And check out the trailer for it. We'll have a link to it on this episode's page. I didn't think I could be more excited for Assassin's Creed 3, but knowing that there's another Assassin's Creed 3 in a similar time period in an amazing location like New Orleans in that time period, Brandon, I want to borrow your PS Vita or buy one myself to play this. It looks so cool.
Well, good, because they need fucking more games at this point. Yeah, I want to buy it just to have more games on my Vita that are not PSP games. But I do have a few questions, don't mind, real quick.
I would love for you to ask questions.
Well, one, I've heard a lot about the things Sony are doing and a lot of the things that I don't care about that Nintendo is doing. What in God's name has Microsoft done this time? Anything that I care about?
Mainly new games and then their glass stuff.
Yeah, the smart glass where basically anything, all of your tablets and phones and stuff like that can control your television.
And basically,
that's amazing.
It's like AirPlay.
Did you hear about this announcement, Brandon?
Which one?
The Microsoft Glass.
No.
It's basically, it enables the tablets that you already have, be it Apple or other producers. It'll basically enable Wii U stuff, essentially. Not with the complexity of the Wii U controller or anything, but it might actually help Nintendo to be able to have games that be more easily portable between systems. Because now, with the Vita and Glass and the Wii U gamepad, all three systems are working with this asymmetric gameplay and having screens in your hands, so it may actually work out to Nintendo's benefit, for at least for a time. Wow.
So, how's that Kinect doing?
Well,
they didn't really talk about the Kinect at all.
We did play a Kinect game that was a lot of fun.
We did.
Which is Marvel's The Avengers Battle for Earth, and it's a fighting game that's essentially Dance Central if it was a fighting game.
So, Kinect is not for serious gamers yet, like they said it would be?
No, though a lot of our friends with Kinect who play Mass Effect 3 really have enjoyed what it's brought to the table.
Hmm.
Isn't that right, Colin?
The thing that's interesting is that last time at E3, everyone was excited for, you know, the big three. People were waiting in lines for the Wii U, people were waiting in lines for the Vita, and then Microsoft had some interesting stuff, as you know, not really over the top, but everyone was excited for all three. And it seems like they kind of took a back seat this time. Like, all the other smaller corporations, independent companies, or just ones that don't own consoles, were they basically in the front rows this time as opposed to last time?
Well, that's not necessarily true. It's just what we covered. Because honestly, they released a lot of big stuff. Like, Assassin's Creed 3 was huge.
But they didn't announce any spectacular new things that we didn't know were coming out. There were no secrets that they suddenly were like,
Halo
here's
4.
A new system.
Halo 4.
Yeah,
that's huge.
And if you haven't seen the Halo 4 videos, I highly recommend it.
You know it's not being made by the same people, right?
Yeah, I know it's not being made by Bungie, but this game does look quite exceptional and has gotten me excited about Halo again from what I've seen so far. It's definitely something worth checking out. It's very surprising where they've gone with the plot, and the things you're fighting look really engaging. It's true. Microsoft hasn't really brought much to the table, and the biggest reveal they've had, because we knew Halo 4 was coming, was the confirmation of the rumors we'd heard about Microsoft Glass. And I think mostly they're producing a lot of solid, steady games, and this will all lead to the inevitable release of a higher powered system in the near future.
I mean, really, all they have to do is release another Call of Duty game and they'll get more money.
Yeah,
that's all they do.
You know, first-person shooters were a dime a dozen. They all look incredible. They all look super engaging. They all look like at least a reasonable amount of fun. There were a ton of them at E3 this year, and we didn't even bother to cover any of them because they're an oversaturated market right now. Like, what the hell can we do about it?
Yeah. Okay, well, there's a few other questions I have about, like, actual franchise games. I don't know if you covered any of this, but just in case you caught something out of the corner of your eye, did you see anything about Metal Gear?
Yeah, Metal Gear Revengeance was being displayed. It's a it's basically been described as the Devil May Cry of Metal Gear, and the lead character is Raiden.
Yeah, I've been waiting for that for a while. I just didn't hear much about it.
We didn't have...
There was a lot of game footage online of it, and it looks amazing.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. We didn't have any hands-on with it, but we have watched a fair amount of video, and it looks really cool. You can... basically, it's Raiden jumping around with a big-ass super sword, and you can slice anything, be it tanks or people, into tiny little bits.
Yeah, he did that in the he did that in Metal Gear 4, and it was pretty awesome.
The weirdest part is when you do slice people up or objects, they disappear almost immediately.
Yeah, that really bothered me. After he sliced anything up, they just disappear.
That's not very realistic.
It's really not, especially in one of the situations that involved the slicing turns into a puzzle element. Where there's this tank you need to eliminate, and you do so by destroying a beam that's like, which in turn crashes a bunch of stuff on the tank. So you slice up the beam, and there's all this is large stuff on the screen. You slice up the beam, and it destroys the tank. Well, as soon as that happens, the tank evaporates and the beam evaporates. What the fuck?
Yeah, it's like. It's weird because Metal Gear is known for its realism. Even when you have, you know, wonky-ass robot ninjas slicing a tank in half or a guy who looks like he's undead vampire, they actually explain it all at certain points with technology and science, like it could actually happen. But vanishing enemies when you kill them, it just makes it into an action game that's not very realistic at all.
Yeah,
so.
I think it's just not within the technologies of the current gen, with just leaving all those particles living there, each having their own physics. But I do recommend watching the trailer for that, because I was like vocally saying, holy crap, wow, and all this crap showing on it. It looks great.
And it may also interest you to know, Brandon, that there's a Metroidvania style Castlevania game coming out for the 3DS. I don't know if it's going to be any good, awesome. But it's
first
there.
First person you said?
No.
Okay. I just thought you meant kind of like Metroid Prime, Metroidvania thing.
Yeah, no, okay. No, Metroidvania being like the ones for PlayStation. Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, there's so many of those now that it's just like I've kind of lost interest.
Yeah. People said nice things about it, but I didn't get any hands-on with it.
Yeah.
Well, I have like two other things I want to ask. Go really for it, man. About just specific games. One was, did you hear or see anything about Last Guardian?
Nope.
Nothing about it here this year.
Once again, awesome.
I really think that has been canceled.
They keep saying
Sony
it
keeps
hasn't.
Saying it hasn't been, yeah.
Maybe they're waiting for the PS4. I don't fucking know.
Well, 2 years from now. Okay, then my last question was there anything, and I hope to God there was, about any new Star Fox game?
No. That would have saved Nintendo from the disaster that was their press conference.
I think that's what everybody was waiting for, to be honest, was a Star Fox announcement.
Yeah. Or like a new Metroid game that wasn't about babies.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, everyone's been universally agreed, Metroid or Star Fox, any kind of last-minute announcement at the show would have absolutely blown everybody away and saved them from any of the fumbling that they did with trying to explain the Wii U on a stage. And it's true. The Wii U is something that you do have to have hands-on time with, and not even Nintendo themselves have really figured out how they want to use it. So it left us all feeling really super awkward. But not being able to deliver that kind of star power last-minute punch at their press conference, we all walked out of there feeling really weird.
Yeah.
Aww. Me especially, because I wasn't feeling good that day.
Because Colin had the whiskey shits.
I did.
Oh, Colin, you know not to drink whiskey before a press conference.
I know. I was taking a book out of a page out of Mike Pandel's book.
To be fair, someone had to do the drinking this time.
It's true. It was
speaking
me.
Of which, Spill, how was Damo? Did you see her this year?
I looked around. I didn't see her.
No.
She's probably busy on her party buses in L.A.
we did hear that AJ LoCascio, voice of Marty McFly in Telltale Games, is Back to the Future series. He did continue talking to the booth girl Domo, who.
Oh, are you serious?
But now he's gone steady with a different girl. He's very happy.
What? But she's a go-go dancer.
Well, she's also maybe not the kind of settled down lady that AJ got with. Not that I know anything about her, because I don't.
No, she's just... definitely not a settled down lady.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well.
Yeah, not even close.
Oh, well. Okay. Anyway.
So, guys, this has been E3 2012. Thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for listening and all this stuff. If you guys have any more questions about the games and all the things we saw, feel free to hit us up on the forums. We do love talking to you all. And we've got, if you liked what you heard, if you want to support the show, we are listener supported and we would greatly appreciate any contributions, even if it's like a couple bucks. If you send any support money our way, we send you some support perks in the mail. And every month we have a different support drive. And this month is a pretty cool one. You get to choose the gaming system we're going to use for our next one-off RPG podcast. So there's lots of different things in the running and it's going to be a lot of fun no matter what it is.
Mass Effect.
Colin wants everybody to contribute to the
Mass Effect,
the Mass Effect tabletop system. So you know,
by the time you get back, there might be a new gaming system here we haven't had before, so we can add that one to the list.
Yeah, there's the just check out our rules on the page, and we've got, you know, the sky's the limit. We'll do whatever. If you guys like the show, please contribute to us. You make us able to do such awesome things such as attend E3 and so on, and we want to be your eyes and ears in all these various nerd outings and everything. Also be sure to check out all of our videos and everything. All of it's over at nerdyshow.com/E3 2012, and
yeah, they're gonna be coming out as within the next couple of days. They're gonna be trickling out. You're gonna get a bunch of them tomorrow.
Yeah.
A bunch.
Yep, a baker's dozen.
Dungeon. Of incredible games.
A baker's dungeon
of incredible games. Unbelievable.
Yes. So thanks for listening, guys. Bye, I'm Cap.
Oh, wait. To let you guys know, before we leave, we're going to exit out on Go Where You Want to Go by the Mamas and the Papas. Bye, I'm Colin.
Why?
Because that is where that lyric comes from.
Oh.
Go where you want to go, do what you want to do with whoever you want to do it with. Go. Who are you over there, buddy?
Brandon goes.
Bye, I'm Brandon.
Sorry. Who are you now?
I'm Matt now.
Oh, okay, now.
And I'm tired.
So am I.
I'm Matt Rex.
I'm Killplix.
And they're in the Eastern time zone. We're in the Western time zone. And everywhere we are, it's late. So we're all really fucking tired. Thanks for listening so much, guys. Boom.
One, two, three, go!
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Nerdy Show. Nerdy Show is brought to you by a comic shop, Nerdapalooza, and the Oviedo branch of Play and Trade. If you have questions or comments, please feel free to send them to info@nerdyshow.com. For more episodes of Nerdy Show, Dungeons and Doritos, comics, videos, and more, go to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to all Nerdy Show podcasts via the iTunes Store. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Nerdy Show or friend us on Facebook. If you enjoyed what you heard, support Nerdy Show by telling a friend, or better yet, give us your money by visiting the Nerdy Show store and picking up a t-shirt or donate directly to cool Nerdy perks.